Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much. Where is this one? Hey, there you go.
RTE Radio 1.
Oh, yeah, so we're here. Yeah, sorry about that. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. I was arranging all the clips for you. I hope you had a good weekend. If you want to contact the show, 51551 Ray at RTE.ie, as I say. We were out yesterday down by Sandymount. And I saw this very impressive V-shape of birds. And then there was a second V-shape and they were making a lot of noise and they were quite large. And I thought, they must be Brent geese, because I do pay attention the odd time to when people are talking about migrating birds. And then I looked it up and I thought, no, they couldn't be Brent geese, because Brent geese don't leave Ireland until April. Now, we're not in March yet, so that would have been too early. So we put a call in to Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland and said, what did I see and what did I hear? They sounded like this. From afar. And he says, they're almost certainly Brent geese, Ray. They normally stay here through till March. They arrive in September, October, and then they fly back when the winter's over. But the flock that you saw yesterday, says Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland, commute each day to North Wicklow from Clontarf to feed. It sounds so quaint, doesn't it? So what I was witnessing there was, it was a flock of Brent geese going from Clontarf down to North Wicklow for Sunday afternoon tea. All very civilised, but Brent geese they were. So there's loads of bird activity at the moment. I know there's murmurations of starlings around the place as well, and lots of things going on. Did you watch the rugby? You did? Did you notice that the Ireland's call was played very slowly? Now, if you were a conspiracy theorist, you could get a theory together that maybe the Italians wanted to scupper our motivation, and by playing Ireland's call slowly at the beginning of the match, it would put the Irish team off their game. It was so slow, in fact, that it managed to befuddle some of the Irish players. They ended up singing a beat or two behind. And then Conor Murray did well. I saw him belting it out. Ross Byrne, out half, he was spotted laughing. I spotted him laughing at it. So this is the pace that it was played at. A lot of Irish travelled, and you can hear them. They're ahead already. Go on, hurry up, will you? Anyway, it didn't matter in the end because he won, which means that Ireland now are the only unbeaten team in the Six Nations. I was trying to figure out why we don't get as excited as other sports. Now, a lot of people watch the games on the telly when they're on Virgin Media 1 and RTE. But there isn't the same buy-in as there is, for example, for a World Cup or whatever. And I think it's because it's not knockout. You know, it's there's no real jeopardy, as somebody was saying to me today. It's not a knockout competition. Although we're heading for the Grand Slam, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Yes, we've Scotland and England to play. Scotland on the 11th and then England at home, the Aviva Stadium. St. Patrick's weekend is the 18th of March. What a way to celebrate being Irish. Watching our rugby team win the Grand Slam. But two matches to go, and Scotland are playing very well, although they were beaten by the French over the weekend. And of course, when it comes to Ireland's call in the Aviva Stadium, it'll be played at the right pace, I can assure you. Yes, it will. On singing songs, I see Brian May from Queen has come out and said that they used to get very irritated by crowds singing every line of their songs. It really upset them. Oh, really? Did it? Did it? Yeah. We thought people just listen. We're working really hard, so bloody well listen. Ah, come on, Brian. You're not the crack. Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place. For Brian May. We will rock you. Stop. I suppose as a performer, you can't really decide what the audience are going to do. Although I've known performers in the past asking people to stop clapping, etc., etc. Still on music, Elton John and Dolly Parton were among the celebrities to pay tribute to Dame Olivia Newton-John in a state memorial service in Melbourne. It was marked by thousands for the late actress and singers yesterday. John Easterling spoke about his late wife, the love they shared and the life that they had together. He's quoted as saying, "Every day with Olivia was a bit of magic." Australian singer Delta Goodrum performed a medley of Dame Olivia's songs to end the service. And amongst all the tributes and the montages, one eagle-eyed listener who was watching the memorial online spotted something and sent an email to ray@rte.ie. Grainne says, "Thought you might like to know that you featured in the personal photo montage of Olivia Newton-John's state memorial that took place at the weekend in Australia. About 6 minutes or so from the end, lovely photo of the two of you from when she was here in 2019, I think." That's nice to know. Lovely to know. I'm a big fan of hers, you know, right back to the Grease days. Because when she sang this, I was convinced at the age of 13, 14 that she was singing it to me. Of course she wasn't. Guess mine is not the first heartbreak. A lovely woman, and she was in here, she was in radio studios, she was over on TV as well. Just a lovely company and a lovely woman, and she did an amazing amount of work for cancer research and cancer treatment. And there's an institution in Australia named after her because she fundraised to pay for its building and its upkeep. Hopelessly devoted to you. Yeah. 5 on 5, 5 on ray@rte.ie. Now, we spotted today that you will be, if you're sitting down to watch EastEnders tonight, you'll see a familiar Irish face. Hello, Alison Spittle.
How are you getting on?
Not too bad.
It's mad that Olivia Newton-John, I was on the same night.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. So and she was very glamorous and very beautiful, and I was very afraid. Like, she was amazing. My uncle Paul was mad about her as well. I'd keep him as far away from her as possible. So it was a job for me that night.
Just in case. So, that's
a coincidence. I mean, you've met my family, Ray.
I have, yes. They're the best crack ever. They're really good crack. So they're going to be sitting on couches all over the place watching you tonight on EastEnders.
On EastEnders.
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't it mad?
Yeah.
I auditioned for it before Christmas, and then I got told I got the job, and then I had to keep it a big secret. And this has been, I've been busting to tell people for ages, because it's just so exciting. I was a big fan of EastEnders, because half my family are English and Irish, and it's the only thing that they have in common is actually watching EastEnders.
So tell me now that you're on EastEnders. Go on, tell me. It's a hushed secret sort of thing.
Will I do it?
Yeah, go on.
I can do it in an accent.
Okay.
So my accent is me impersonating my dad because he's English.
Okay.
Right? I'm on EastEnders.
Is there anything else you want to tell me?
No, I mean, that's perfect, right? I mean, that's perfect. So it's on tonight. It's only a small part, but I'm delighted to be. It was amazing being there.
Yeah.
It was great. You get driven around in a golf buggy to hair and makeup. I was driven there, and the lady read the script. She said, you're supposed to wear no makeup. So she just sat me in the chair and patted me on the shoulder. And I got picked up again, driven around. You get to see Albert Square, Queen Vic, everything.
Wow.
And they were so nice to let me take pictures. And I was like, it was in Disneyland.
And you have a speaking part, obviously. We've established that.
Her name is Deborah, and that's like the thing is, being a soap star now, Ray, I don't know how much I'm allowed to say. Do you know what I mean? It's very coveted and secrecy. But I suppose I told you they have golf carts. Maybe I've revealed too much. But it was very super exciting, because it's a big part of my childhood.
That's brilliant.
Isn't it mad?
Well, no, I think it's great, and we've a history of Irish people on EastEnders, don't we? Like Pauline MacLean. Patrick Bergen,
Tom the fireman. I think he was going out with maybe Little Mo.
Right.
He got killed in a fire. I remember that as a child.
And he was Irish as well. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And now the latest one is Alison Spittle. Maybe one of the days, because we're always looking for ideas, we'll have Irish people who featured on EastEnders. Sounds like a good.
That would be amazing. would be amazing. I would.
Would you be up for that?
I would watch that.
Yes.
Definitely. Oh, look, I'd be the first in line. Absolutely.
Because you're on it, Alison Spittle, I can tell you this. For the first time in a long time, tonight, I will watch EastEnders.
Get out of my pub, Ray. Get out of my pub.
See you, Alison.
What's
bye.
Going on?
Good luck. Bye, bye, bye. Well done, well done.
Bye, Ray.
I still dream.
Kate Bush, Cloud Busting on RT Radio 1, 515501ray@rt.ie. Patricia reckons she has another theory about what I witnessed yesterday. She's in Castlebar in County Mayo. You possibly witness whooper swans. These swans also congregate to return to their native countries, which can be Scandinavia or Eastern European countries. The whooper swans come to Ireland for shelter from the cold weather. They have a distinctive sound which is magical to listen to. Unlike the mute swan, they have a straight orange bill. They can be seen flying in V formation, and it's a sure sign that winter is over. Thanks for that, Patricia. There was talk on Friday and over the weekend about the most common baby names from last year. Emily and Jack were the winners, and the girls and the boys. I spotted a thing over the weekend, and this is a bit of crack. It's if you go to visual.cso.ie, and you can put in your name, and you get two things. Firstly, it delivers a graph of how popular your particular name has been since 1964. I suppose that's when records began or whatever. 1964, right up to the present day. So there's a blue line. That's the number of babies each year born with your name. And then there's an orange line. And the orange line shows the ranking of your name over the years. So I was just looking at Raymond, for example. It's the one I know best. So back in 1964, yeah, it peaked around in the early 70s with nearly 300 babies called Raymond. Around 1974, and it's all but non-existent. The second part of what you can get is a certificate to say, to tell you how many babies were called your name last year and where it ranked. So I have mine in front of me. Raymond, it's a lovely little cute little certificate. In 2022, less than 3 babies were recorded with the name Raymond. So I didn't put in Ray, but that's it for Raymond. So if you go to visual.cso.ie and you can see, for example, in your family, whose name was the most popular last year, who's ranked highest, or maybe in the office or wherever you are. Visual.cso.ie, and it's free of charge. Free of charge. Okay, our whodunit quiz. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 3 questions each. All whodunit questions. And this is the theme tune. Yeah, 2 people, 3 whodunit questions on music, sport, books, films, politics, comedy, TV. All types of human endeavour, and because they're whodunit questions, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get 2. That's 2 points if you opt for the more difficult option of not taking a clue. However, if you go for a clue, it's easier, you get 1 point, and there is a prize. And all this week, we're given whoever wins the chance to win a 2-night stay for 2 in one of the Ainua Collection's 4-star hotels with breakfast each morning and dinner on an evening of your choice. Kick back in Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel, taste the magic in the Tullamore Court Hotel, or relax in the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk, or any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Something for everybody. Inua Collection, that's inua.ie, inua.ie. Here's your qualifying question on this Monday afternoon. Stargazers were treated to some spectacular scenes across the country last night, but what did they see? The Northern Lights or the Southern Lights? So what was visible in the night sky last night? Northern Lights or Southern Lights? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope joins me in studio, and I'm going to be challenging Conor to a rap. I have to come up with some name for it. What would you call it? A rap off.
A rap off. If you want, I can do Eminem, and you can.
Mic drop. Yeah. No, it's rap with a W.
Yeah. No. 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 Yeah. I'm prepared, Ray. Otherwise, yes. It'll be a very bad item.
Yeah, and the reason we're doing that is because the Design Age Institute in the UK have surveyed more than 2,000 over 55s, and they say that difficult to open packaging is the biggest stress factor in their homes. So we have 5 of the things that they list as being difficult to open, and I'm challenging Conor to see who can unwrap them the quickest. So we have a toothbrush in its wrapping, we have a jar to open, we have ham, sliced ham, laundry pods, and Listerine, which is according to the Design Age Institute, the most difficult.
Yeah, I'd agree with them, to be honest.
Okay.
And my big challenge for the next 7 or 8 minutes is to get through the item without swearing, because I am terrible for unwrapping things, and I also swear like a docker when I'm doing it.
Oh, do you?
So
right, okay.
I hope you've got one of those mute buttons. Keep your finger on it, Ray.
No, we're actually, there's a 5 second delay.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah, no, but it's not true. People believe that, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I promise I won't swear.
I think back in the day they had the 5 second delay for certain broadcasters, yeah.
But also the other big challenge for me is to not use my teeth, because my 5-year-old and my wife are forever telling me, don't use your teeth with the packaging.
Oh, yes.
And I'm very bad at that.
Now, we are at a disadvantage because we don't have all the utensils that would be available to you.
The sharp knives.
Yes, exactly. All that stuff that you can do yourself real damage with.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay, well, before we get to our wrap off with a W, the big news today, it's in all the papers, that people on fixed rates are facing into huge increases when it ends for them, when their period of fixed rate mortgage. And one of our listeners got on to us at pricewatch@rte.ie. Dear Conor, I know you've talked about mortgages before, but the focus was always on trackers. I'm on a fixed rate and I've just under a year to run on it, and I'm afraid when it ends, my repayments are going to skyrocket. Is there anything I can do to stop that happening?
Well, it's certainly going to be a tricky time for this person, and indeed for tens of thousands of other people who are going to be facing the same scenario. But just by way of context, for many years, for more than a decade, interest rates in Ireland, and indeed across the European Union, were incredibly low. In fact, they were at a standstill. And then last summer, everything changed, and the ECB increased its main lending rate from 0 to 3% in less than a year, and it's going to hit 3.75% by May or June. And that's a certainty. And that means that anybody who's got on a tracker will be paying around 5% in interest by the end of the year, compared to 1.3% last July. Now, that's costing huge amounts of money to people on trackers and variable rates. So it's costing anyone now who on a typical mortgage of 150, 160 grand, around 250, 300 euros extra a month. So that's more than 3 grand a year, and that's net. So you'd have to earn 6 grand just to make that.
So
that's the tracker thing. Now, the main lenders have been slow, relatively speaking, to pass on the increases to their non-tracker customers. So, for instance, AIB has hiked its rates, its fixed rates by 1%, and its variable rates by 0.35%.
Obviously, if they're fixed, if you're on one already, they can't
you're
hike
fixed,
it.
And yes, this yes, yes, so this yes. person won't notice any change until they come off their fixed rate. So that's important. And in fact, when we did an item on this a couple of months back, somebody got in touch with me saying they were on a fixed rate and they were worried that the rising rates would impact them. It doesn't. Your fixed rate is protected until the end of that term. Mm. Now, so as I say, Bank of Ireland has hiked its fixed rates by 1%. But by the end of the year, they reckon that all of the banks will have moved and will move significantly. So I remember last summer, I think it was probably actually in 2021, we were talking about, I think Avant Money had come out with a long-term fixed rate of 1.9%. Now, you do well to get a fixed rate of 5%.
Wow.
By June of this year. So, and that's what all of the speculation and all of the informed industry commentary is saying. So what's that going to what
so
impact?
So what would most fixed rate people be on at the moment?
Well, the good news, I suppose, for a lot of people is I think 92% of all mortgages that have been agreed in recent times have been fixed rate mortgages.
Okay.
So a lot of people who took out mortgages in the last year or 2 years or 3 years will
good
be
news
protected.
For them. Okay, but people who are coming to say, if they took out a mortgage 10 years ago and it was fixed, would that have been on around 2% or 2.5%?
Well, no, let's say if they took out a mortgage 4 years ago on a 5-year rate, they might have got a rate of maybe 2.5 or 3%.
Right. So it's going to
double. It's going to effectively double. So let's say if you fixed a 2.5% in the past 5 years and you had a mortgage of 250 grand, and your rates will climb to over 5% when the fixed rate ends, and that could see you paying around 500 euros more a month on your repayments. So that's 6,000 euros.
So that means for people, they roughly have to earn 1,000 euro extra to service
absolutely.
Their
mortgage. Absolutely. But the question then is, what can somebody in this situation do? So the first thing you would do is you would look to see if you could act now. Right. So let's say if you were in a fixed rate mortgage situation, and if you were able to break out of that fixed rate without paying a penalty with your bank. So let's say if you're on 2.5% and you could break out of the fixed rate mortgage and sign up to a new fixed rate of 3.5% now, even though you'd be paying more for the next 6 or 7 months than you would be if you stuck with your fixed rate.
Do you think that's possible?
So a lot of banks allow it, and particularly the older mortgages, so the ones that are 4 or 5 years old. So if you were to be able to break out at no penalty
and you could fix for another 5 years at 3.5%. I mean, a lot of the wisdom out there would suggest, well, that might make sense. So you'd pay more in the short term, but the thinking would be that you would pay longer in the...
Is there anything in the government reintroducing, you know... tax benefits on mortgages?
There was a lot of talk in the run-up to the cost of living package that the government introduced last Tuesday about whether or not they'd reintroduce mortgage interest relief. Yes. And I mean, it was one of those kites that was flown early on in the process, at the start of this year, and it was discounted almost immediately. Now, a lot of the opposition parties were saying that should be something that should be considered. And I guess it's something that the government might like to have in its arsenal for later in the year, depending on what happens to the cost of living crisis and depending on what happens to prices. But the bottom line is that we are kind of at the mercy of the European Central Bank, and the government has to be very careful that it isn't seen to be getting involved in the policy measures that the European Central Bank is taking, because the European Central Bank was set up to be entirely independent of governments. And to be fair to the bankers, their main role, in many ways, their solitary role is to bring inflation down. And the only lever they have to bring inflation down is effectively interest rates.
This is central banks as opposed to commercial banks.
So like, they will be looking at it and they'll say, right, well, inflation was 8-9%. We need to get it down to 2%. So even in the best case scenarios that the government in this country and indeed in other countries are talking about now, is inflation might be 4% at the end of the year. It's still not enough for the European Central Bank. So there could be a lot of pain coming down the tracks. But also, it is worth pointing out that interest rates do rise and fall. So they're on the way up now. Hopefully in the months and years ahead, they will decline. I don't think we'll see an era of 0% interest again.
Yeah.
And certainly, reading a piece that one of our senior managing editors, Cliff Taylor, wrote in recent days. And he was saying the era of that cheap money is pretty much over. So the central bank will be looking to not waste a good crisis by keeping the rates higher. So
your advice is to preempt what's going to happen.
Actually, do you know what my advice is? And my advice is to talk to somebody who's a qualified financial advisor and talk to a mortgage broker, talk to somebody who knows what the various different rates are, what the caveats are within those rates offered by various different banks, and get the proper advice. But do get the advice rather than just sitting there going, oh no, we're all doomed. Talk to somebody who knows, and talk to somebody who can give you that professional advice.
That's sound advice, Connor.
Thank you very much.
Right. Now, okay. Before we get to our wrap off, Connor, how did your name fare last year?
Well, it did really, you know, for donkey's years, Connor was like number one, and it's such a nightmare. Because like when I was growing up, there wasn't that many Connors. So like there might have been maybe one other Connor in my class. Right. But for donkey's years in the last decade, like Connor was the number one name. So you're just going to, it'll be Tom, every Tom, Dick and Harry will be called Connor in the years to come.
Whereas, nice.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So Niamh thankfully printed out my cert from the CSO, and in the year I was born, I'm not going to tell you, it's 1968, Connor was ranked 43rd of all baby boys recorded in Ireland, and there was just 150 babies recorded with my name.
Okay.
Whereas now, it's gone up to, at one point,
Give me that. That's last year.
What?
Yeah, that's last year. That cert is last year.
No, it says at 90. Look at that, Ray. Look at that.
Sorry. I printed my off for last year. Sorry, go on.
So you can
get one for every year then.
Yeah, so at the peak of the Connor crisis.
Yes.
In 1997, between 1997 and 2003, that was the height of the Connor mania. There was around 900 Connors christened.
That's every year. A sizable number.
That's too many.
Yes.
Like, it's far too many. Whereas when I was born, it was a really manageable 150. And it's fallen right back now. Unfortunately, Niamh only printed this out in black and white, so that's not much use to me. But I think it's fallen right back to around 700 Connors a year, which is still too many.
No, it's not going to be 700 Connors a year. It couldn't be 700 Connors a year. Give me a look. Sorry. I'm a stickler for it. Give me a look. No, you're, Connor, you're down to less than 40.
What?
Yes, less than 40 Connors last year.
There is no way in the world there was only 40 Connors christened in Ireland last year.
I'm telling you. It's less than 40 Connors.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
So was I, let me give me back my chart now, right? That's my
No, I'm going to tell you exactly. Sorry. This is 275. That's what it is. 275.
Last year,
right. Okay.
But there was only 140 or 150 when I... And at the peak, there was like 900.
Okay. Right, sorry about the mix-up there. You can go to visual.cso.ie and you can get all your certificates and all your stats, and hopefully you'll make better sense of them than I've just there with Connors. Okay, so it's wrap-off time.
I think that's probably your excuse, Ray. You were a bit nervous about the wrap-off.
I was.
So that was detracting from you. So now what do we need to do? I'm very excited by this. I love a good competition.
Well, it's toothbrush first.
Toothbrush,
okay?
Right.
So it's just to see who wins, really. These are supposedly notoriously difficult to unwrap.
And is there any rules?
You just have to free the whatever it is from
by
its
all
wrapping.
Means necessary.
Yes, yeah, okay. And this is Design Age Institute 2000 over 55 difficult to open packaging is the biggest stress factor in our homes. We need a bit of music. There you go. Okay, and we're off. This is a toothbrush here. You see, actually, this is probably the worst situation to be doing this in because.
That's what a loser says, Ray. Here we go. The toothbrush is out of the box.
Oh, well done. Okay, you win. Did he use his teeth? Well, it is a toothbrush.
Yeah, we agree. We agree by all means necessary.
Okay, let's move on to two. It's the jar of virgin coconut oil. This is probably, there's more about strength than speed. Okay.
There we go, Ray. That's 2-0 to me.
I'm talking and he's unwrapping. That's not fair. I've things to do. Anyway, it's all right. 2-0.
Okay, so what are we on next?
Hold on. Just hold on.
I told you I was very competitive.
Okay.
It's
laundry
these.
Pots. Here we go.
Oh, God. Okay. Oh! And it's 3-0. Pope can't be beaten.
Right. Okay. This is the one. This is the one that's supposed to be the most
difficult.
Oh, no.
What about the ham? Are we not doing the ham?
Oh, ham. Sorry. Where is the ham? There. Okay. Right.
Go.
Yeah. See, I usually do this with a knife. He's using his teeth again. He's
offer.
Did you curse?
I said offer, which is not a swear. There we go. Now, the terrible thing about that, Ray, you can't possibly reseal that.
No.
I've totally destroyed that package of ham.
But that's a misnomer anyway, resealable.
It doesn't work at all. Yeah. Oh, now you've started with the Listerine.
Sorry. Right, this is the Listerine.
Actually, this is the one I hate most.
I do apologise to our listeners for this, but anyway.
It's Radio Gold, Ray. Radio Gold. Oh, look at this. This is the childproof lock thing that's going to catch me.
There you go. Oh. I won one. I got the most difficult.
I'd say that was a tie now. I'd say if we were to look back at the cameras, if we got the video assistant referee, they'd suggest that was a tie.
Good luck. The VAR, yeah.
Yeah. We did quite well, actually, I think.
I don't know. You can do this at home along with your CSO figures for your name. So the wrap-off. So you got toothbrush, jar, ham, laundry pods, and then we think maybe by
a millisecond. I'll give you the Listerine.
Thank you very much. Which is the most difficult. So, you know, there you go. I was holding the best for last. Have you seen Physical 100 on Netflix?
No.
You have to watch it. It's a Korean program. So it's a bit like Ireland's Fittest Families.
Okay.
But it's with MMA fighters and gymnasts and wrestlers, and there's 100 of them and they have to get down to one, and there's a huge cash prize for the winner.
Oh, it's a bit like Squid Games without people dying.
That's it. With real people. Connor Pope, PriceWatch at RTE.ie. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to Connor next week.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, visual.cso.ie. Sorry about that confusion. And you can find out all the stats about your name since 1964. And you can find out where it ranked last year, 2022. Jack O'Donovan Traw recently travelled to Vancouver, Canada for a screening of his short movie, The Kingdom of Kerry, at the Festival of Ocean Films. The movie showcases our connection with the sea and the need to future-proof our coastal waters. And Jack joins me in studio. How are you doing, Jack?
Great, thanks for having me.
Jack O'Donovan Traw.
Sinead, yeah, exactly.
Traw as in beach or...
Exactly, yeah. There's so many O'Donovans in West Cork, you see, that it's hard to tell one from another. So every O'Donovan gets their own kind of nickname depending on where you're from.
Oh, right.
Exactly, yeah. So my family are from Montreal Darug, which is the Red Strand, just outside Clonakilty.
I know it, yeah.
Yeah. So that's originally where my family have come from. My grandparents still live just down the road, so that's where the Traw comes from.
Ah, that's a lovely part of the country.
Absolutely,
you're near Galley Head there.
Yeah, exactly. You can see it from my grandmother's window, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've stayed in Galley Head there.
Have you, in the lighthouse country? Yeah. Oh, they're beautiful out there.
That was amazing.
I bet.
Yeah. So no wonder then that you have a love and a passion for the Atlantic Ocean and you want to make sure that we keep it. Well, I suppose we've done a lot of damage, haven't we, so far? As when I say we, I mean humans.
Oh, absolutely. Look, absolutely we have. But I think we're at the time now where we know the problems and it's about time to put the solutions into practice. Because right. we also know what they are. It's just about acting on them, you know, and that's okay. really...
So you went about interviewing people who work as in fishermen, people who are in conservation, and they all said the same thing, really, didn't they?
Absolutely, yeah. So the film we made with, so I'm the communications officer at Fair Seas, which is an Irish campaign led by our leading environmental NGOs and networks to create marine protected areas. And so we made the film with this community voice method of filmmaking where you talk to all the different people in a community. And what we saw was, you know, usually you might have people who don't speak to each other on the ground. So the divers mightn't always get to speak to the fishermen, or the boat operators might get to speak to the conservation people. But we all want the same thing from the sea. We want healthy seas. We want to be able to pass down what we've had from healthy seas to the next generation. So we all want really the same thing. And it's about getting the word out there about protecting our seas within communities and showcasing how we can really work together now to protect them.
Okay. So MPAs. At the moment... what's the percentage of our seas that are MPAs?
I mean, when Fair Seas started about a year ago, we were at 2% of Irish waters that were within marine protected areas.
Yeah.
So these are a bit like national parks, but in the sea, you know, the high value nature areas in our seas. And just before Christmas there, Minister Malcolm Noonan announced bumping up that figure, and now it's about 8%. However, the crucial thing is that no matter what the percent is, currently we don't have any management plans or monitoring in place to actually see what's happening in those areas. So
right.
we're hoping for 30% of the seas to be protected by 2030, and the government have actually signed that commitment themselves. But what we need to have is robust management plans in place with them, and as well, like that, getting on the ground, talking to communities. We have to have stakeholders involved, people on the water. Everyone has to be a part of the journey.
So you can have as many rules and regulations as you like, but if they're not policed, they're all but useless.
Exactly. And if they're not even, you know, taken upon by the local communities, you know, if we don't have engagement from people who are on the water, then it's, we have the same issue.
How do you make this come to life for people who don't live by the sea? How do you make it, how do you connect with them and their lives? So I'd imagine through their plates, their dinner plates, is it?
Well, first of all, yeah, definitely your dinner plate. But second of all, the very, very basic thing of your breath. The fact that over 50% of the oxygen that you and me are breathing in this studio today has been generated by the ocean. So tiny, tiny little plants that grow on the surface of the sea that are actually generating all of that oxygen. So every second breath we take, essentially, all that oxygen has come from the sea. So definitely that is a big number one. We're all breathing here, you know. So,
that's important, yes.
Yeah.
So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is, of course, our fish stocks. Like, I don't know much about it, but I would imagine if we continue to consume fish at the rate we're consuming it and the way we're fishing it, that there won't be any fish left. Is that the...
Well, look, there's a million things that we can and solutions we can implement maybe to make our fisheries more sustainable. I mean, Ireland has a traditional fishing culture. You know, we are an island. We've lived off the sea for thousands of years. And only on Friday, I was down actually at the Irish Farmers Association Aquaculture Conference. So that
right.
was the mussel and oyster farmers, seaweed farmers, everybody. And also met with representatives from our big, fishing groups like the Irish South and West. And, you know, we were talking there about how is it that we implement conservation, because obviously, you know, people are making a living and we need to make a living, but, you know, as beautiful as our coasts are and our coastal towns and villages, you know, we all might flock there in the summertime, they can be hard places to exist, you know, especially if you're working in that industry and there's a lot of pressure, say, on the fishing industry. But definitely, yes, there are things we can do to make things more sustainable. And an amazing thing with marine protected areas that we're working on is that if you create these marine protected areas and within those you have these highly protected sites, which are called no take zones. So that's where no human activity occurs. So that's no fishing, no extractive activity, nothing. Within those sites, they become so abundant in marine life that it allows them a safe haven to grow larger and to reproduce more quickly.
There's a knock-on effect for everywhere else.
Exactly. It's called actually the spillover effect.
Okay.
So it spills outside.
Do you think people know where their seafood's coming from? For example, if somebody has prawns tonight for dinner in a salad or in a curry or whatever, where are they likely to come from?
So, yeah, I mean, there are so many different species of prawns. Actually, a lot of the prawns we eat, when you talk about prawns, come from countries as far away as, you know, Indonesia, like far from the far other side of the earth. And what I'd say is an amazing thing, yeah, to connect to the sea is if we look at our plates, and if you're in the supermarket and we're looking at species, it can be tricky. It can be a tricky place to figure out where your food has come from. Often you'll have the species name, and we've all these terms as well now, like packed in Ireland or produced in Ireland, but it might not necessarily be caught here. We do have a lot of Irish seafood obviously available in our supermarkets. We do have a lot of that. But what I'd say to people is, yeah, getting to know the fish on the fish counter and getting to know maybe how they arrived on the fish counter, because some species, it's not that one species is more sustainable than another. I mean, sometimes that is the case, but it's often how the species is caught can have a big impact on the ocean. So what I'd say is getting to know the different methods by which fish are being caught.
How can we do that?
So there's a brilliant website and an app. It's actually run by a UK organisation called the Marine Conservation Society. I used to work there in a past life. And it's an app you can download on your phone. And basically, when you're at the fish counter, you can look at the species and, you know, the country you're in, type it into the app, and it's got like a stop go system. It's like a traffic light system. So it'll say red is avoid. Okay, this is been caught in a very destructive way. Amber, which means it could be better. And then green is like, okay, this is the most sustainable option, or this is the best option. And they take in to account a lot of different data, like how damaging maybe the fishing practice itself is, but also the condition of the fish stock and if it's an endangered species or not. Because one thing that I can't believe in Ireland all the time is we have eel on a lot of menus still. You know, eel is a traditional food in Ireland, but the European eel is critically endangered, more so than the panda bear.
Right.
That these eels, these amazing, you know, and they are so important from our mythology. You know, the Book of Kells has eels in them all over them, but that is critically endangered. And still in Dublin, there was a restaurant I passed only today and it has eels still on the menu. But I think just we're maybe unaware of the status of these different things.
And maybe don't get to the top of the queue with your fishmonger in your super value or wherever, and then type it in. You might want to do that beforehand.
Absolutely, yeah. Think about your favourite fish, you know. I mean, we have such a wide array of fish, and actually at the Irish Farmers Association, at their aquaculture conference, we were talking about new reports that show that actually from an animal-based protein, oysters and mussels are some of the most sustainable animal proteins we can produce. And oysters and mussels, what they do is they actually clean the water when you farm them. So they are actually improving water quality in those areas.
We're a good producer of oysters in this country, aren't we?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm not sure if we have the palate for oysters as much as we produce them, but we do definitely export a lot of our oysters. And that was in the reports that Bord Ishiguara were talking about, was that maybe they're low carbon, but then we have this high footprint because we're then putting them on planes to fly them off to Dubai or to, you know, other countries like that who want to consume them. So
why do you think we don't have a palate for oysters?
For oysters, I'm not sure. I know particularly my own grandmother grew up in the Gaeltacht of Donegal, up in the Dúnav, so Downings, you know, and she would have a very embarrassing relationship with seafood because that's all they had growing up there, you know. And I think perhaps there could be some small tie-in with that. Like, I don't know why. We could go to the fanciest.
Well, it's associated with fasting and hardship.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That we have all this choice now, that that's something that we were maybe forced to eat and it was all we could eat. Mm. Even, you know, you see, I actually visited a famine village in West Clare recently, and it's in the Burren Nature Sanctuary. And they went down, and outside these old ruined cottages, there are just 6-7 foot high middens. You know, a midden is like piles of shells that are now under the ground. Just oyster shells, you know, and they're about a good kilometre or two inland. So people were trekking out for oysters and bringing that many back, you know.
Free of charge.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I mean, oysters are delicious and we'd eat them every time we went to the races or any time we went to the fanciest restaurants. Yeah. Oysters would be on the menu, of course, you know.
We spoke to a lady recently about the Hope Spot, because your film is centred around from Loophead down to Kemaire, that part of our coastline. And tell us about this Hope Spot in Dingle Bay and Tralee Bay.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, the film Fair Seas, the Kingdom of Kerry, it focuses on an area that we have identified as a potential for one of these new marine protected areas. So in June 2022, Fair Seas published a report called Revitalising Our Seas. And that identified 16 areas of interest around Ireland, so in our waters, that we think could be good potential marine protected areas because of vulnerable and important species that live there. And then we made this film in the same area. But now, another amazing thing that's happened is that Mission Blue, who are an international conservation group headed by the legendary Sylvia Earle. If people don't know who Sylvia Earle is, people might not have heard of her. She is what they call essentially David Attenborough of the ocean. She has spent her life documenting the ocean, studying the ocean. She's even spent, I think, 6 weeks living full time under the water. Like an incredible, incredible person. And her organization identifies these hope spots around the world that are areas that have been identified through scientific research to be critical for the health of the global ocean. They're so important for marine biodiversity, but also where good community work is happening on the ground, engagement is happening with local people. And then because we were down there making a film and we have a local partner, Sea Synergy, who bring people out there snorkeling and kayaking and really engaging people in the local environment. And like in especially around like all over Kerry. You have an amazing marine and ocean history and culture. You know, in the film, talks to people from like that fishermen, but people who are fishermen turned to ecotourism boat operators, and now they're completely invested in just showing people how precious the waters are down there.
Yeah, and of course, the really dark side to all of this is how we're polluting our seas.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
And how are Ireland's coastlines doing when it comes to plastic?
Not well.
No.
Okay. Not well. So in a recent, the National Parks and Wildlife did a survey of a kind of our protected areas around the coast. We do have some of these special areas of conservation. And over 65% of those areas, coastal areas, were deemed to be in an unfavourable condition. So they're actually, the health of them is declining. They're supposed to be protected and we're supposed to be making them better. Right. But the whole reason that we're campaigning for marine protected areas is because our current areas, which are special areas of conservation, are designated through EU law. And so there's a disconnect there between implementing that in Ireland. But if we have our own national legislation, which we will have, sorry, by the way, I should say, the government are currently writing the legislation.
For these marine protected areas.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah.
So it'll be written into law.
It will, yeah. The Marine Protected Areas Bill is going through pre-legislative scrutiny at the moment. And by July, we will have this new MPA bill written, which will show us how we can designate, monitor and manage these areas, which is the key point.
Are you hopeful for the future, Jack?
I have buckets of hope, but yeah, I actually right. I was listening to a book. There's an amazing book called Generation Dread by Britt Ray, and it talks about like eco and climate anxiety, which is a big thing for young people nowadays. Really important. But what she said is, it's a hope is a top loaded concept in the West, whereby in developing countries, courage, action and then hope is the order. However, over in the west of part of the world, we kind of put hope first and hope it'll be all right without acting on it. So I'd like that we flip that and we'll do some action. We'll pick up the courage.
So what you're saying is hope suggests inaction.
It can. It can. Yes. It depends where it comes in the chain.
So give us the sequence from other cultures.
Courage, action, hope. But in the West, you know, in the Western world, we often put the hope first and then think that that's going to do everything for us.
So. Generation Dread.
Yeah, exactly. By Britt Ray. Brilliant book.
But you can't, you have to forgive people for dreading the future, because everything they hear is doom and gloom.
Absolutely it is, you know, and I really hope that the work of Fair Seas and the amazing NGOs around Ireland and everybody in Ireland, all our amazing communities, that more and more it's going to be solutions focused, you know, and there's this EU nature restoration law, which it'll be coming in now in the next couple of years. Thinking about protected areas, restoration, we have the chance to bring communities together to actually protect nature.
Final question, and it is this, because people, I think, feel useless because they're so minuscule compared to this global problem. What possibly could I do, little old me, to change what has been going on for hundreds of years all over the planet? How do you answer that? You know, and that's the dread, really, isn't it?
Well, exactly. I think that's where the kind of existential part of it comes in, especially for young people. But young people, you are at the foot of, we hear about these tipping points where if we make climate any way worse, it'll start to get way worse. But we can tip it backwards. We're still at that point. So every small decision we make, from the reusable water bottles, sticking to that. But as well, an important thing is who you vote for. Voting for your local representative and ensuring that they know how important it is that we take our future seriously and that they take your future seriously. And especially for young people who are coming to the age where they can start to vote, that we are sure that we have representatives that are, you know, future proofing the systems they're putting in place and the policies they put in place.
All right. Where can people see your little film? Because it's 12 minutes long.
Oh,
so.
Exactly.
But it tells a great story. So where can people see it?
So at the moment, the film is actually doing the rounds of a couple of film festivals. And I think the next screening we're going to have is going to be in Dingle at Wild Minds Festival. So that will be, I think it's April, May time. We're just confirming the dates with that. But that'll be the next screening. Or else go to fairseas.ie, where we'll have more information on future screenings. And we're on all the social medias at Fair Seas Ireland.
Right. Courage, action, hope.
That's it.
That's the message. Jack O'Donovan Traw, Gurmagud. Thank you very much. We're looking for people for our quiz after 4 o'clock. If you'd like to be involved, 0818715925. Stargazers retreated to some spectacular scenes across the country last night, but what did they see? Northern Lights or Southern Lights? 0818715925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Last week we spoke to ski-joring duo from Meath, Susan Oakes and Barry O'Brien Lynch. ahead of them, heading out to defend their title in Calgary in Canada. You didn't hear it? It's a combination of horse riding and skiing. Olivia is on the horse and Barry is on skis behind her, attached by a rope. They're over there still. Let's see how they got on. Hello. Hello, hello, hello. Susan and Barry.
Hello, Ray.
Hi, Ray.
Croaky. How did you get on?
with mixed results.
Okay.
We couldn't defend our sprint title because I made a fatal error and crashed out.
Oh.
Susan was able to pull a stunt rider, Phil Hudick, into second place in the long jump, and we won the Alpine Lounge race. So we got some of the spoil.
Okay. Well, you just explained to people who didn't hear it last week, Barry, the lounge part of it. What does it involve?
Okay, well, the Alpine Lounge race involves building a lounge where you have a couch, a coffee table and a lamp strapped onto a pallet, strapped onto skis. And then that lounge is pulled by two horses in a race.
Ah, right, and you won that event.
That's the one we won this time round, yeah.
Right. So you and Susan were sitting on a couch being pulled by two people. So all you had to do for that one was just sit on the couch and be comfortable.
Well, it's not that comfortable. Now, we eat a lot of snow. But that was it. All the horses did all the work on that one for us.
Okay, we got a huge response to you last week.
Ryan Kennedy.
Say again?
Sorry, Ray. We're being pulled by Sam Mitchell and Ryan Kennedy.
Okay, yeah. I was just saying we got a huge reaction to you last week. People are fascinated by ski joring, and I think you're going to have more sign-ups, or maybe not. Will you go back next year?
100%.
Right. Well, enjoy the rest of your stay. Susan Oakes and Barry O'Brien Lynch flying the flag at the Ski Joring World Championships in Calgary in Canada. Thank you very much. Have we got time for this? Yes, we do. A little bit of this. Gormagad Marion, thank you very much. 51551RadRT.ie. Try and open a lollipop when you're about to land on a flight and your child is screaming. Why is the wrapping so difficult? Yeah, I always resort to the teeth to open those lollipops. Don't know about you. That's how Connor won, of course, today in our little wrap-off. He used his teeth on every one. There you go. Some people say he was cheating. I don't know. Who done it? Yeah, we've two quizzers standing by to answer three whodunit questions each. And we have a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two people in one of the four-star Ainua Collection hotels. They're all over the place. The Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, Tullamore, Court Hotel, Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk, and any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Loads to do. Ainua.ie. Ainua.ie. Hello, Peter Gertie.
Hello, Ray. How are you doing?
Good. You're in Drumconrath in County Meath.
Drumconrath, North Meath.
Right. What's the story?
Sorry.
I'm having one of those days, Peter. Go on.
Yeah.
You're close to what?
Yeah, we're close to Louth, Monaghan and Cavan here, right in the north of the county. Yeah.
Right. And how big a place is it?
It's not that big. Population of about 600. Yeah.
So
we're sometimes confused with Drumcondra in Dublin.
Yeah, well,
and they say, yeah.
Go on.
They say a parish priest here years ago, actually, he found that donations from the USA were travelling to Drumcondra in Dublin, so he got the name changed to Drumconra.
Aha.
So some people call it Drumcondra, actually, yeah.
Because there was a story in the papers recently about a poor man who was leaving New York on his way to Sydney, Australia, and he ended up in a place still in America called Sydney. So if you put Drumcondra in Dublin into your thing and Google heard it wrongly, you could end up in County Meath. I'm sure that has happened to some tourists.
Yeah,
some
it has happened. Has happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're doing a bit of gardening.
Yeah, I was getting second cut of the grass there,
right.
And I'm getting ready with I've got a bit of raised bed.
Okay.
And I've just cleaned it out, getting it ready for sowing, and I'm thinking of putting in. Looking for railway-type sleepers to go around because the moment I have old shelves and they're not a great job.
Right.
So I'm looking for railway sleepers. So So don't, if someone has any tips about where to go, but that right. sort of thing, you know.
Well, yeah, well, there, you put it out there now. 51551 if you know where Peter can get some railway sleepers. We have some in our back garden, and Jenny's always telling me we need to get rid of them, but we'll see what happens there. We'll see what happens.
Oh,
there.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
We could come to some arrangement if you come and collect them, that is. So what are you going to put in your raised bed?
Well, normally I'd be, this is a matter of controversy between myself and the good wife, right. but Judith is her name, by the way.
Hi, Judith.
Normally I put runner beans and also onions.
Right.
Yeah, but I've agreed this year that Judy can take half it, and right. I do the other half.
Oh, brilliant.
I tried peas last year, and they weren't great. Found the runner beans good.
Yeah, salad leaves always work well, I think, says he who's
all
very
right.
little
yeah,
experience.
Well, Judy's yeah. talking about lettuce.
Yes,
all right,
there you
yes,
go. Well,
talking about that.
Yeah, yeah, lettuce, so lettuce, she said to you in a chat. Okay, you're up against Deirdre Black. Deirdre's in Donegal. How are you doing, Deirdre?
Not too bad, Ray. You're very faint.
Yeah, I feel that way okay today. sorry, is that any better?
Yes, that's better.
Okay, and you're making soup.
Yeah, I was reading a magazine, saw a recipe for minestrone soup, so I said I'd try it.
Right. Loads of garlic.
Yeah, 3 cloves.
3 cloves of garlic. What else goes in? Carrots?
Oh, the spaghetti. I put in sweet corn, carrots,
right.
onions,
yeah.
celery,
yeah.
tomatoes.
Yeah, there's
tomato puree.
Eating and drinking in that.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and who'll be eating the soup when you have it finished?
Myself and my husband, Desmond.
Right. That's not a Donegal accent.
No, no, I'm a Dub originally. I'm up here now 28 years.
Right, and why did you go up?
The houses were cheaper, eh?
Right, yeah, it's lovely up there as well, isn't it?
Oh, well, I have a big lake on front of me and
right.
mountains on the other side. Yes, it's stunning.
Come on, yeah, yeah. And then you have your bowl of minestrone soup as well, and some nice fresh
yes.
bread. Lovely,
yes.
lovely, lovely.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you know the rules, Peter and Deirdre. It's our whodunit quiz. So we give you the category. Then I ask you, do you want a clue or not? If you go without a clue, you get 2. If you get it right. If you go with a clue, you get 1. And then it was the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Good luck, Deirdre.
Thank you. Same to you.
That's Peter there. Peter, first category, boy bands. Boy bands.
Oh,
okay.
God. Right, so...
Fire away.
Do you want a clue with it?
No.
No.
Shoot away.
Shoot away, okay. Which boy band is this?
I'll go for Westlife.
No, it's 5.
Ah,
British band.
5.
Okay, early days.
Okay.
Deirdre, boy bands for you as well. Do you want a clue or not?
Oh, I want a clue.
You want a clue? Okay.
Yeah.
Listen carefully. This is your clue. This American boy band want you to quit playing games with their heart. Okay, for 1 point, who is this? Tell me why. Well,
we try One Direction. No idea.
No. Backstreet Boys. Backstreet Boys. Okay, so no scores. So it's even. An even start. Peter,
right.
Second category is reality stars. Reality stars.
Right.
Now, do you want a clue or not?
Oh, bugger, that's a weak point for me. I think I'll have to take a clue, Ray.
Okay, I don't know if it's going to help you, but here it is. Listen carefully. This reality star and her family are also famous for their hotel empire. Okay, that's a clue. It's a good one. Who is this for 1 point?
So today I'm going to tell you some of my favorite 2000s trends and why I love them. Tracksuits. Tracksuits are so cute and comfortable, but always wear ones that are colorful, or else you'll look like you're actually going to the gym. Ew.
Who's that?
Try Paris Hilton.
Yes, correct. Well done. Well done. You get a point. Paris Hilton is correct. Yes, there you go. You're on the scoreboard. Now, Deirdre, reality stars. You have the gist now, so you sort of have a bit of an advantage. Do you want to go with a clue or not?
Oh, God, a clue. A
clue, okay. Listen carefully. Here it is. This star shares the spotlight and her first initial with her four other siblings. Okay. This star shares the spotlight and her first initial with her four other siblings. Who is this?
I mean, I think it's just in life, like no matter what it is, I just think I encourage my friends and the people that I love just to be happy. And I went for it. I was like, you know what? I'm in my 40s. Like just go for it. Find your happiness.
Who's that?
Is it Kardashians?
It is. I'll take that. It's Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, it could have been Kourtney, Khloe, Kendall or Kylie, but it's Kim. Just find your happiness. That's all you have to do, Deirdre. Just find your happiness. It's easy for her to say. But you have it there with your lake and your mountains and your minestrone soup. Okay, it's one all. One all. Peter, final category. Right. Tech moguls. Now, I'll just give you the permutations. If you go without a clue and you get it right, you're on three, which puts Deirdre under a lot of pressure. It means she has to go without a clue as well. If you decide to take a clue and get it right, you're on two. Deirdre could go without a clue, get it right, and she would be today's winner. So what would you like to do?
I'll try without a clue.
Without a clue. Okay. We're talking tech moguls. Okay, tech moguls. Who is this?
We're not going to be here in the 2030s communicating and using computing devices that are exactly the same as what we have today. And someone has to build that and invest in it and believe in it. And there's a lot of new technology that needs to get invented to create that.
Who's that, do you think?
We'll try Gates.
No, it's not Gates, Bill Gates. No, it's Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh.
Head of Meta, formerly Facebook and all the other things.
Okay. I won't use any bad language.
Yeah, you're not out of it yet, Peter, because Deirdre only has 1 point as well. If she doesn't get anything from this, then we're into a tie-break situation. Okay, Deirdre, it's tech moguls. I think you're going to go for a clue, but I don't know. Are you going to go for a clue?
Yes, I'm going to go for the clue.
Okay. Rightio, listen carefully. This techie is the mastermind behind the world's biggest online retailer. Who is this?
I think of the internet. So the internet is this big, new, powerful technology. The fact that I can look up almost anything on Wikipedia in 5 seconds is an unbelievable capability that just simply didn't exist 20 years ago.
Who's that?
I'll go Elon Musk.
No! Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon. Anyway.
Have never bought from Amazon in my life.
Have you not? I'd say you're one of a few now. I'd say you're an ever-decreasing number of people who've never bought from Amazon. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay, it's one all at the end, lads, which means we go to a tie break. Now, you were asked this question before you went on air. I'm going to repeat it now for our listeners. And whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner. So here it is. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from Kilkenny Castle in Kilkenny to Burragh Castle in County Offaly? Your guess, Peter?
Was 2 hours, 25 minutes.
2 hours, 25 minutes. Okay.
It might be less.
It's 77.6 kilometres. Your guess, Deirdre?
I said 4:20.
Four hours, 20 minutes. Okay, from Kilkenny Castle to Burragh Castle. The correct answer is 3 hours and 55 minutes. Peter, it was more, and Deirdre is closest, so unfortunately, she's today's winner for you, unfortunately for you.
Oh, well.
We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup.
Thanks, Ray.
And listen, good luck with the gardening. Enjoy the chat.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Peter.
And,
good luck.
And congrats to Deirdre.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Deirdre, well done. You are today's winner, which means yourself and a person of your choice are off to one of the four-star iNUA collection hotels. They're all over the country. You can go to inua.ie to see what's in store for you. Lovely talking to you, Deirdre. Enjoy the soup. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Three gorgeous frogs on the front of the Irish Times today with their heads peering out of the water. It was taken in Wicklow. It's their big moment. It's their time of the year. It's breeding time for frogs. Colly Ennis is our frog man. He's a zoology research associate in Trinity College Dublin and he's on the line now. How are you doing, Colly?
I'm good, Ray, and yourself?
Good. You're a big fan of the frog.
Yeah, I absolutely adore them. I think they're fantastic little creatures. This is their time of year, like you said. Romance is in the air. And it's the real first sign of spring that we see in Ireland is even before the daffodils start sticking their heads up, the frogs are out and the spawn starts appearing. And it's a great sign that, you know, summer's around the corner.
Yeah, so what's their mating procedure, if you like?
Yeah, well, the lads arrive first. So they're all pumped up on testosterone and raring to go. And then they'll arrive at the ponds and they'll start calling for the females. And it kind of sounds like a moped convention because they're rah, 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 all these kind of revving noises coming from the right. pond. And that draws in the females because they love these handsome lads singing to them. And the bigger males will kind of get the best positions and grab onto the female when she comes in. And I don't know if you've ever held a frog, but they're quite slippy.
I have, yeah.
So, yeah, so the males have a job hanging onto them. So they actually have these pads on their fingers called nuptial pads.
Right.
So they're like gripping gloves that they develop during the breeding season to hang on to the females. So
it sounds like somewhere you go on a honeymoon, a nuptial pad. Where are you off?
But they'll actually fight each other over them because the you know, sometimes the females will get a younger, smaller male on her back, grabbing onto her. And then when he gets in with the big boys, they'll start kicking him off.
Right.
It gets quite boisterous and it's fascinating to watch.
We have some of the mating call, we think. So you can verify that this is actually a frog mating call. Here we go. Is that it?
That's our frog. It's not our frog.
Oh, right, it's our frog. That's some exotic,
That's an exotic. If he was in an Irish pond, he'd probably have all the collians flocking to him, though. He wouldn't know.
So that's not an Irish frog. There you go. That's the one we found online.
No.
So they grip on and they have it. But the thing about it is that fertilisation is external.
Yes, it's like a fish in that way. So the successful males then will kind of hang on to the female until she releases all the eggs. And when the eggs come out, they're not like the classic frog spawn that we know and love. They're actually quite small and dark, and the male fertilizes them. And then they start absorbing water and swelling up and then turn into the kind of gelatinous stuff that we know as frog spawn. And that's a really useful material around the eggs. The black dot in the middle is the egg, because that actually protects it from cold snaps and from predators as well. So a really, really good way of protecting their young.
So I'm just trying to get my head around this external fertilisation. So she has all these eggs. Are we talking thousands of eggs, or what are we talking?
Yeah, hundreds
of eggs, right.
And depending on the size of the female, bigger females will obviously produce more eggs.
So has he sort of marked her down on his dance card, if you like, before that?
The males aren't that fussy.
Okay.
You put your hand in, a male will grab onto you at this time of year. They
right,
kind of lose the run themselves. As soon as he feels her, like he's in amplexus, it's called, when he's on her back with the gloves on, grabbing onto her. And as soon as he feels the release of the eggs, then he releases his sperm and the fertilisation takes place.
In the water beside them? I'm just trying to...
In the water, yeah. Yeah, so, all under the water.
Right, so what if another frog was passing by, another male frog?
You do get these pirates, we call them. You get them that will actually grab onto clumps of spawn, because sometimes there's unsuccessful younger males and frogs that just don't hook up with anyone, and they'll grab onto spawn and kind of get into amplexus with the spawn.
Right.
And
that's them, in whatever way they think, perpetuating their gene
exactly
pool. Right,
yeah, exactly, trying to get in on the ladder of reproduction.
Right, so has that happened, or is happening now?
It's happening now.
Okay.
We kind of got a cold patch there this week. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah,
the temperatures
I
went down a little bit again, so that kind of resets them. It will warm up again and then they'll kind of kick back into gear. When you get towards the end of the season, you get a lot of the males that have been left without a mate will get more bold and confident and not really care. Frogs are usually very shy creatures, but during the breeding season, when they get into that frenzy, they really don't care anymore. And you could actually even go up to them during the daytime in spots where you know they're breeding and have a good look at them, get some good photographs, like that beautiful photograph on the front of the paper today. they really kind of show off at this time of year.
Yeah, Nick Bradshaw, he's a constant. I'm always mentioning him because he takes such brilliant wildlife photographs.
Fantastic photographs, yeah.
So then it's back to my childhood. We were able to take the frog spawn out of the local river or pond and mm-hmm. bring it home in jars. You can't do that anymore unless you have a license. I believe schools have licenses to do that now.
Yeah, if you're a teacher, you can actually apply online. It's you can just Google it, tadpole or frog spawn license Ireland, and you just fill out a form. Basically, just in case someone comes across you taking it, you can explain what you're doing. And you can watch the kids come down and watch the tadpoles developing, and just before they turn into frogs, to pop them back where you found them. The reason why we have to have them protected is because, I don't know if you've noticed yourself, but a lot of places that used to have frog spawn and frogs don't have them anymore. And especially around urban areas, like I grew up in Dublin, and you can see parks that used to have them, they're disappearing, and we've been monitoring some of the parks and watching the numbers go down lower and lower.
And is that because people were taking the spawn out of the rivers and the ponds?
It's a combination of a number of factors.
Okay.
You know, like everything in nature, there's death by a thousand cuts with pollution and habitat fragmentation. Our gardens aren't as open as they used to be. Mm. So frogs used to be able to move across gardens. Now everybody has concrete walls.
Yeah.
So it's more difficult for them to move. The ponds that they're in, a lot of fish have been introduced, which aren't great for frogs at all. So there's a load of different factors. On top of that, we definitely don't want people taking jars of frog spawn away.
And where do frogs fit into our ecosystem? What do they do? What's their function?
Right. So they eat everything smaller than them, and everything bigger than them eats them.
Right.
So they're right in the middle.
It's pretty straightforward.
So they're brilliant for eating all your garden pests. They keep numbers of bluebottles, flies, slugs, all that kind of stuff down. And also they provide food for everything from herons to badgers to otters. So they really are a very important keystone species.
And
they're a good indicator of a healthy ecosystem, you know what I mean?
You've a pond in your back garden?
I've 12 ponds. 12 in my
ponds?
Garden.
Well, you have one.
Yeah, I've a giant one, and then I put in a lot of smaller ones around, so kind of just to give them different options for residency, you know.
Okay.
And if your listeners ever want to help out the frogs, we are always encouraging people to just build a pond in your garden. It doesn't have to be mad expensive. It can be anything from a tub from a hardware store, sunk in the ground with water in it and some plants and a rock for the animals to get in and out. And they'll use that. Frogs will use it. You know, they don't need something spectacular. They'll spawn in puddles and something small like that can really make a big help to local amphibians in your area.
Collie, did you have to populate your ponds, or did they come from around, or what way did it work?
So I built my pond. I lived in Talla for 16 years, and we lived right beside the Dodder River. So when I built my initial pond in Talla, they showed up. They were in the area. You'd be surprised if you do put a pond in, they do tend to show up. And we've had great success. I get a lot of feedback on Twitter from people who have built ponds, and they've showed up naturally as well. And up in the new house there where I'm living in Wicklow, there's hundreds of them. It's fantastic. Okay. I'm in frog heaven at the moment, so it's really, really cool.
Right. So it's spawned, then it's tadpoles. How long is it before they become frogs that can hop around?
So that's temperature dependent, and so if you have frogs that spawn in very shallow ponds, those ponds tend to heat up very quickly in the sun, and then you'll have frogs that spawn at the side of a lake, for example. Mm. That will be a lot cooler water and will take longer to warm up. So the tadpoles in the shallower ponds tend to develop faster. And much quicker than the other ones in the more deeper, cooler ponds. And that just spreads out the metamorphosis of the whole population over time and gives them a little bit of a... So they're not all emerging at once.
And what's the ratio of birth to survival, or fertilisation to survival?
Yeah, not good.
Right.
because that's why frogs spawn en masse the way they do. They're playing the numbers game as opposed to... caring for their young. Do you know what I mean? So it means that out of all those clumps of spawn, you might just get one or two that will replace the parents that spawn them.
Yeah.
And that's again why we don't want to be taking spawn away in big numbers from an area.
You'll have to shove a microphone out into your garden one of the mornings in a few months' time or a few weeks' time, so we can hear what all the frogs sound like.
I will. I'll send John a recording of
them. Yeah, will you? Yeah. Are you a fan? Somebody wants to know, do you like the frog chorus?
I absolutely love it. It's one of those songs I put on at this time of year, like the sad old man that I am. But yeah, I really love it. I think it's fantastic.
Well, Colly Ennis, thanks so much. And this is dedicated especially for you. That's a very pleasant way to finish proceedings on this Monday afternoon. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening. That one fire there. We'll do this one. Here we go.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.